You have two options.
Okay.
One, both you're at a concert. Okay.
Okay.
I don't know if you're a concert guy at all. Do you like concerts?
Yeah, it depends. Okay. But yeah.
So let's say it's a concert. You love them. You're obsessed with the band.
Mm-hmm.
And they call you up on stage. And you go up there, and they call you up and two other people because it's a dance-off, okay? And
you're like,
yo, I'm in, right?
Yeah, I'm in.
And the first move you make, you fall literally right on your face and just face plant.
Okay.
You're like, well, that just happened.
Right.
Then you get up, and you got to keep dancing, right?
Mm-hmm.
So that's your first option. Second, they call you up because you get to sing with them, okay? And it's your favorite song. You get up on stage. It's your turn to start singing, and you forget all the lyrics, and you just freeze, and you just stand there and stare out into the abyss of the crowd. Which one are you choosing?
Oh, I'm falling on my face all day. Being frozen in front of people is the worst thing. And because I also think that falling down on your face, if you can't laugh at yourself, you take yourself way too seriously.
Yep.
And so I would rather fall, get up, and do something again dumb to try to make people laugh again. But if you give me a mic and I freeze and I don't know the lyrics, everybody that's there is like, why are you at this concert? Like, why are you, you should know the lyrics. It's your favorite artist or whatever it may be. So yeah, I'm definitely falling.
Okay.
I'm falling face first.
Yeah. I would choose to fall face first. Same thing. So I'm like, I don't even know where to start to recover on being frozen. Right. Well, it's here. But I thought about it because I was at a Macklemore concert a few months back, and he brought up a bunch of people to do a dance-off. These first two people go up, and this girl goes up, and her first move, you could clearly tell, is like, oh, like, you're like a legit dancer. You're probably in high school, maybe early college. I can't tell anymore as I get older. I think everyone looks younger.
Yeah.
But she's definitely young. Second move, she legit face plants to the point where she actually gets hurt, and she just kind of like stands up and dances a little more and just puts her head down and walks away. And I don't know if she was so embarrassed or how bad she got hurt, but then she ended up like leaving the concert because he later stops the whole concert and like calls out how beautiful the moment was because his song is about failure, right?
Ah, wow.
He's like, this is epic. He's like, yeah. I didn't stage it. This girl comes up, gets hurt, keeps going. And he calls her out and he's like, hey, where are you? And I'm pretty sure her name was Missy, and she wasn't there. And so then he was even more hurt. Posted on his social doing a shout out like, hey, if anyone knows who this girl was.
Wow.
And I'm like, okay, that's pretty epic. Like,
that's cool.
It takes nerves to get up and just keep going too. Like, some people are like, oh, well, now I'm done. But yeah. She's like, no, I'll keep dancing. Like,
that's amazing. What an opportunity to fail forward, kind of just be right? Like, yeah, I'm failing. Yeah.
So when it comes to failure, do you think you have to be chasing growth in order to fail? Or do you think you can fail just existing?
I mean, I think you can fail just existing. I just don't think that the rewards of it are good. I don't want to say good. They're not as good. And so I think that in everything in life, risk is a part of it. And, every day I get in a car and I drive, I'm taking a risk. You get on a plane, you're taking it. Like, risk is a part of failure at all times. And so I do think that it's better to do it that way, for sure.
Yeah.
I'm all for that at any point in time, taking risk. And I think that risk is, I don't know where you're at with like a DISC, like personality assessment. So I'm an ID on that personality assessment, which means that I'm super extroverted, but I'm also very straightforward. But I'm also the guy that's like, I need people, like, validation is something I love, but I'm also, I don't need the plans to figure out what we're going to do. Let's just go do it. And we'll figure out the plans as we're doing it. And some people don't operate that way, but that's me. That's how I feed my soul at times. Is taking risk.
I'm all at the top, and I'm a DI.
Yep.
So I'm right on the border, but just on the D side of it. So, well, if you all haven't figured out yet, then you probably shouldn't be on the podcast. But you're tuned in to Do You Even Fail. I'm here with Mitch. Super excited to dive into today's conversation. This is the fourth one in Texas.
Let's go.
They haven't kicked me out yet, so this is good.
He needs to move here. That's why.
One day, right? That's always the goal. But Mitch, give him the 1 minute flyover of who you are before we talk about all the nice face plants in your life.
So I am a pastor. I'm also a a leadership coach for executives and for people in the church world. At the end of the day, I believe this. I believe that my purpose is to help others discover their purpose. And so whether that looks in, whether that's in the church world or whether that's in the business world or the marketplace, whatever it may be, I really want to help people develop, why am I here? And why am I on this earth? And how can I become the best version of myself so that I can produce the best way of living my life while I have time on this earth? So that's me in a nutshell. I'm a father. I'm a sports junkie, a runner, not by natural nature, but by habit. And it's something I've built into my life for the last 10 plus years. And so, yeah, that's a little bit about me. I love people, man. People are my jam. If I could be around people, I don't like being alone.
Right. I don't do well alone.
I don't either, man. It's awkward. As I've gotten older, I've gotten a little bit better at it. You learn the pace of the life that you're in and the season that you're in. But, man, it's, yeah, people, I want to be around people at all times, to a fault.
So do you believe in this rumor of runner's high?
100%.
Really?
Yeah, yeah. I've experienced it. I'm not saying that it's that everybody experiences it. Some people, when I tell people I run, they go, a lot of people will say, like, for fun. And I'm like, yeah, yeah. I'm most creative when I run. I think at a higher capacity when I run. And I do believe when I say run, like, this will be my fourth half marathon this year in April. People keep asking me when I'm going to do a full. I don't know that I will, but just built into my life is this cadence of rhythm. And I believe that there's been times where I've been in a struggle and I've been on a run, and it's just, I've naturally just produced, like, everything has gone out of my brain and I have been more focused and effective with the way that I live my life. And I didn't realize that I was on the run. I mean, it's over. And you're like, oh, I could have gone another 5-6 miles. I didn't.
Yeah, you're like, right, stop.
Nah, I'm good. But yeah, I believe in it.
Interesting. Yeah, when I trained for my last race, I still haven't found it. I just dreaded.
You said you did an ultra, right?
I did, yeah.
Yeah, there's no high for an ultra. That's just death. that's like a curse. I don't know that.
I'll never do it again.
Yeah, I'll never do it ever. Yeah. So props to you, bro. You and David Goggins, man, just out there crushing life with the ultras. But I think the high for me has become lifestyle. Like, it's created, there are times where I know I've got to go run for my health, not only physically, but mental health and spiritual health. Like, I'm most creative. I put together content for, you know, if I'm prepping to give a message at a church or even at my local church or just to people. My content is way better when I'm consistently running. And so it makes me a better person.
Yeah, that's the gym for me. I'm like, keep going, creativity expands. But now I just realize I probably will get called a liar because I'm not going to run another ultra. But I'm my buddy and I want to do the rim to rim in Canyon.
Yeah, yeah. I have a buddy that just did that.
Oh, really?
He did it last summer. Yeah. He hiked. He absolutely loved it.
Really?
Yeah. He said that there's people who don't need to be out there doing it. Yeah. He was like, I was trying to help a few people, but he's ran a marathon and he's going back out again this summer, I think.
Okay.
Yeah, he's done it twice.
Okay.
Loved every bit. I go, dude, I need to go do it with you.
Yeah.
And so I want to run. There's a race in Moab that I would like to run. Just a half. I'll stick to my halves. I'm only half crazy. I don't do the full marathon stuff, and so. I would love to do that eventually. We'll see.
Good for you. So, life, him and I already caught up plenty, a lot of great context. I'm not going to choose where we poke first or the first, you know, failure we're going to hop onto. I'll let you decide where you'd like to start in your journey.
Yeah. I'm the youngest of four. And I think my whole life I have tried to prove to my siblings that I'm not the youngest of four. And that plays a lot into how I've operated, even coming out of high school and into college and into adulthood, is always trying to prove a point. And here's the deal. My siblings, they didn't put any of that on me. It was just the natural cadence of my life. It was a natural kind of rhythm of like, my closest sibling to me is 10 years older than me. So I always felt like there was this, they felt like they had to protect me. And they didn't. That's just how it felt. And so I say all that as like a foundational principle, because this would lead into how I live my life. Of always trying to prove and always trying to earn and always trying to be somebody that other people recognized. And so 2011, I went to a conference and it was about church planting. And it was about how, every state, every country needs good, solid churches to reach people in their community, to love on their community, and to give back. And I, in that conference, I was like, this is going to be me. Fast forward to 2018, I moved to Texas and planted a church. And a lot of people, if you're watching this and you're in the business world or you're in like tech world or any kind of startup world, the church planting is similar in the idea of like, it's a startup. You have to cast vision to people, get them to buy into why it's going to change their life. Would you be interested in funding this so we could get it off the ground? So you wind up having conversations with people you don't know, setting meetings with people you've never met, and you're trying to convince them why this is a good idea. And if you're not from Texas, what you need to know about Texas is there's like a large church on every corner in Texas. So they're like, I can go to this church. Why would I want to come here? So there's a lot of convincing. We wind up raising, 150 plus in capital to get it off the ground. That's just like to launch day one. Then with everything, there's a side of it that is business savvy, where you money in, money out, lights, all these things. We would set up and we would tear down every week in this wedding venue. And so I had a trailer, 7 o'clock, 6 o'clock in the morning, we're unloading, rain or shine, cold, hot, you're unloading. I remember one time we showed up and the wedding venue had a wedding on Saturday night before we had church service, and they forgot. And the wedding venue just said, we showed up and there's beer cans everywhere. It was hilarious now. It wasn't in the moment. I was very angry. And so we had to tear down everything and then set it up for our church services. And I just remember those days of like, this is fun. This is amazing. But this isn't fun and this isn't amazing in life. And at the end of 2019, I had grown tired. And halfway through 2019, my marriage started to struggle, and then this amazing thing happened called COVID in 2020, and the average person attending my church was around 29 to 33, young people, which was kind of my vibe. I was all about reaching young people, young families, and when COVID happened, they all decided, hey, we got to hold on to our finances, which was completely fine. And so I wound up having to dissolve that marriage. And I like to tell people this. Leading up to that, I had experienced 4 burials. Leading up to that, I had experienced 2 burials in my life. My parents, both my parents have passed away. And then that day, that I decided to dissolve the church, I experienced 2 more burials. My church, my startup, my baby that I loved, and my marriage simultaneously. And that was hard. And I had completely failed. Dissolved everything. I had failed as a husband. I had failed as a pastor. I had failed as a leader. I was giving people advice on how they should do their marriage and their lives and lead their kids. And I was struggling to do the same thing. And so I just failed, if we're being honest. At the end of the day, the only person that could be held responsible for that failure was the guy in the mirror, and that was me. And so when we dissolved the church, I tried to work on my marriage, and some things you do in that season, you do because you think it's going to earn the person's trust back and that they're going to want to come back. But really what I needed to do was a work on myself a whole lot. And so I did, I went on a journey of trying to work on myself. And if you're not familiar with the way church world works, it's just like in anything, we put a lot of emphasis on a person's gifting. Like if you're like good in front of people, we need you to be in front of people. If you're good at singing, we obviously need you to sing in front of people. If you're good at leading teams, we need you to lead teams. If you are good at like being hospitable, I need you to create an experience that people are going to love. These are all things that we want people to do in church. And they're all things that I think that every corporation and business wants to do as well. The unfortunate part is that those are all external things. And what I was doing was being used in my gifting, communication, rallying people, leading, raising up leaders, but I was not using the things that mattered most. And this is where I would say that the fruits of the Spirit, like of what it looks like to be a follower of Christ, would be gentleness, kindness, self-control. I didn't have that. Anger was quick in my life. What it looked like to care for people. These were all things that I failed at. And these are the things to me now that matter most. When I'm looking at hiring staff, when I'm looking at being friends with people, connecting with people, these external things come and go. Internal things are the things that add value to your entire life. So I failed at all that. And I wound up, a guy that was going to our church owned a section of a parcel company. He owned a few routes. His name's Chris Ford. I love this guy. I just texted him the other day on his birthday. He gave me an opportunity to deliver and drive packages in the middle of a pandemic because nobody was hiring. No company, everybody was on a freeze.
Oh, yeah.
And so the only people hiring were people that were people were ordering everything online. So this is a little regional company that's Dallas, Fort Worth, San Antonio, Austin, called Lone Star Overnight. And I delivered packages for them for about a year, sun up to sundown. And I remember I was a contract driver for them. I'll never forget this. I took a picture of it. I remember getting that tax form back for the amount of money I made that year. It was the most humbling thing that's ever happened to me. I remember calling people and having them help me pay bills because I had lost everything. And I made $20,000 delivering packages in this season of COVID. And I was applying for jobs everywhere. And so I did that for a season. And man, that season though was the most, that season built me. That season of tough, that season of not knowing where it was going to happen. I mean, literally, I told this to somebody the other day, my bills, they should have just sent me the shutoff notice. Like, don't send me the real bill because I'm not going to pay it until the shutoff notice comes in. That's how bad it was for me. And a lot of that is, again, I had to look in the mirror and say, what did I do to set myself up for something if something did go wrong to where I could survive? And I had done none of that because I lived, unfortunately, in the clouds. I'm a dreamer. So that's that high eye coming out of me in disc. I'm a dreamer. The unfortunate part of that is that sometimes dreamers don't put, process to practice. And my fallback was, let's go plant a church. That's plan A, and there's no plan B, C. There's nothing. And so during that season, man, I struggled. I struggled, but it was, man, it built me. Getting up at 4:45 every morning, delivering packages. There, you don't realize what you can do as a human until you go to a place to where you have to do what you have to do as a human. And I would go and I would jump on trampoline with my daughter after delivering packages for a full day. Sometimes I would go run 2-3 miles after being up from 4:45 to 8 o'clock, 9 o'clock at night, there's something that was just in me that was innate survival. And to be honest, I told somebody, I kind of miss that survival mode every once in a while. You get comfortable when life gets a little bit better, when you work your way out of it. And so that's why I love risk, is because sometimes it makes you have to go back into survival mode. How are we going to do this? What are we going to do? Well, let's make it happen. And so I eventually got a job as a drug rep. I was working for this company in pharmaceutical world. About 6 months in, some partners had come in that were getting ready to buy them out. So I knew the writing on the wall. You have one person that's a lead. You have a person that has probably a little bit less of a salary. And you're going to take the guy in the middle, and you're either going to get rid of him because you need the cap, or you're going to get rid of everybody because you want to bring in people that you need or that you want. So I wound up getting a job with another company doing something similar for about another 8 months. And I started going to church again. And over time, the church that I went to offered me a job to be an executive. So I handle all of our, at our location, we have four locations across the Metroplex. And at our location, I handle, you know, where are we at as far as like growth, who's coming in that door, who's going out the door, systems, leadership. I grow, help our teams grow. I do one-on-ones with our team, which led kind of into a weird phase of me creating again on the digital side of LinkedIn. I got LinkedIn because I needed a professional network in the pharmaceutical world.
Okay.
And I was like, I need to know doctors, nurses, anybody in this world. And so I've had LinkedIn since its inception, but I had never used it. So at the back half of 2021, I started just sharing a little bit of like leadership content, and then connecting with people like you eventually. And next thing you know, just over time, you share content and you share some of your failures, some things of, you know, I'm a pastor and I'm divorced. Those two don't go together. That's oil and water in the church world. I'm a failure at starting something, but people started buying into this content that I share daily about, you know, leadership. And some of it's the majority, 80% of my content's about, you know, strategic leadership. The other is just about random stuff, me running or my dog or mainly my daughter. But man, I say all that to say, like, failure is a part of my life. And without it, I'm not the man I am today. I see the world through a completely different lens than if I wouldn't have failed. And if I can encourage anybody, if you're watching this, if I can encourage you, man, I think that one of the single greatest things you can do in your life is fail. And if you're not failing to me, you're probably not going to do a lot with your life, because safety is the enemy of progress. And progress is what I think gets us to the next level in life, is trying something new. I'm one of those people like, let's just do it. And I'm older, more mature with what I say that let's just do. I'm not going to go run. Right. I'm not going to go run an ultra, bro.
Yeah, like, I think about things actually.
I want to live, but you learn through failure. It's the best way.
So I'd love to unpack a little bit on the phase of burying your church and your marriage. Yeah. 'Cause I think too often people try and separate business failure from life failure. Mm-hmm. And I think they run parallel to each other a lot. Absolutely. More than I like to admit. And so, I mean, for me personally, I know when I got way too caught into business, and all of a sudden now I'm spending 2024 going, how do I get my marriage back to where it was? And it's weird because people look at you and go, oh, so you like, you want a divorce? Like, nope. Oh, so you're not in love with her? Nope, I am. Oh, so you're, no, it just, I went this way because I was trying to grow a business. She went this way. She's trying to grow a business. Mm-hmm. And now all of a sudden a year later, we're like, oh, we're in two different worlds, right? Mm. So what would you say was the demise that pulled you two apart, and how, what advice would you give someone to cope in that season?
Yeah. I think that the demise at the end of the day, and some people don't like this, and some people would probably push against this, but we as humans are selfish. And the demise for most marriages, two things in marriage that usually ruin a marriage: money and selfishness. Well, and we'll throw, and by selfishness, I mean communication.
Yes.
Like not communicating how you actually feel, not communicating how you, what you really need. And for me, I think that was the demise of my marriage, is that I can communicate in front of people really well, but when it came to being behind the doors of my own life, there's something about bearing your soul, because there's a protective lens around, you know, communicating to people. But when it comes down to it, the unfortunate part is that I didn't do it well enough. I didn't communicate well enough in my marriage. And there are a lot of things I wish I would have done different. And one of them was, ask more questions about how she felt. How do you feel about this? what's your take on this? Am I doing this right? Am I leading responsibly? Is this the best way for us to build our family in the future? I think a lot of us, we get this burning desire in us to go do something. And this is true for marriage. This is also true for friendships and any kind of relationship. There's this burning desire to go do something. If those closest to you don't have the same burning desire, there's an immediate disconnect. And that disconnect, done long enough over a long period of time, will create not just disconnect, it'll create resentment. It'll create a life of anger, and a life that's not healthy. So if I were to do it now, number one, way more counseling, way more marital counseling. I would be involved in that a lot. Didn't do it enough. And then number two, I would look in the mirror and I would say to myself, am I doing this for me, or am I doing this because this is what I really feel like I'm supposed to do on this earth? And at the end of the day, what we do is we separate the two. Well, my job is what I'm supposed to do. No, what you're supposed to do is provide, protect, and be the priest of your home. Your job, the way you do that is your job, yes. But if your job takes you away from provision and presence and all these things, then it's really not healthy for you as a human. And so for me, I look at it as like, man, I could have done a lot of things different. But looking on it now, I imagine at some point in time I'll get remarried. They'll get a completely different version of me, one with more understanding. And it's unfortunate that it had to come to this for somebody else to experience, and really for me to experience it. Even my kid, I am so much more patient with my daughter than I was before. Because I think that when you're in the midst of building something, you're so focused and so consumed with it. And there's nothing wrong with being focused and consumed with what you're trying to build. I think it's necessary if you want to build it the right way. But you tend to have less patience for the things that, you know, you work long hours and you come home and you're tired, and you have less patience for your kids or your spouse, your significant other, whatever it may be. And so I think the biggest thing, man, is looking back and saying, I could have communicated a lot better, and I could have handled our finances a lot better. And if you want to get right down to it, the end, most marriages end on those two things: finances and communication. Because nobody wants to communicate about their money,
right?
Because that's embarrassing. If there's not enough, it's embarrassing. Or if you're like me and you were raised in a family that didn't talk about money and you're insecure about it, And this is where the insecurities come into play as leaders lead, and us that are business leaders or entrepreneurs or faith-driven leaders, our insecurities play out. And what we're insecure about, we don't like to talk about. And it, when you're insecure about it, you're like, I'm not going there, because if somebody knows about it more than I or does it better than me, then I'm not the man I'm supposed to be or the woman I'm supposed to be. And so I wish I could go back. Obviously you can't, but even now my ex-wife and I have a super amicable relationship. I'm a different father, a different person. And so bearing those two things, I was full of shame and guilt and resentment and embarrassment. And you can only live in those things for so long until they eat you alive, man. Resentment and embarrassment and shame. And I think that that's where a lot of people live when they fail, is embarrassment, shame, guilt. I wish I would have done this. And the reality is you didn't. Yeah. And because you didn't, this was the result of you not doing it. But I'm healthier mentally than I've ever been. You know, I do, bro, you're an entrepreneur. When you take risk, for me, I had never really experienced, I had a pretty good life. My parents loved me. My parents were always there. And for me, I hadn't experienced a lot of anxiety. When you go to launch something from the ground up, you've got to get people to buy into it. I remember laying in my recliner and pulling a blanket around me really tight to feel safe at night, because I had started experiencing anxiety and I'd never experienced that before. I'm a happy-go-lucky dude. And when I started experiencing that, I was also raised by a father who was drafted into the army. So talking about your feelings was not like something you did at our house. And so I did what I only knew. When I started feeling anxiety and some depression, I just put my head down and kept going. And I didn't talk about it. Because if I did talk about it, what kind of man am I? And what kind of leader am I if I talk about what's really going on the inside of me? And so I wish I would have talked about it more, what I felt. Not just to my ex-wife, but to people. People that I knew I could have talked to them about it, but was still too embarrassed. And that goes back to me being that kid of earning, of like, I don't need anybody's help because I got this. I'm going to do it better than you. You're not going to do it as well as me. I'm going to prove to you. And I think that what happens in that is you become very insecure. And when you lead from a place of insecurity, you never provide security for those that you're leading. And the worst place you can be as a leader, to me, is an insecure one. Yeah, it's killer. It's
a horrible spot.
Yeah, right? It's horrible. And there are times still where that I fight that. I mean, I don't know enough about this. I need to go. And that's why it's important to have people in your life and people who are doing it better than you that you can really ask questions to. Like, how are you doing this? What are you building into your life that's allowing you to do this? I was at a conference, a one-day conference yesterday about leadership and growth. I'm in the room. And you know, some of the things that I dealt with in that room were, I'm divorced. Nobody in here. I'm never going to do anything like this. There's just this constant chatter in the back of my brain of, you're not good enough to do any of this. And it's a wrestling match. I had to go home and wrestle it to the ground. And I have these statements that I say about myself often. One of them is, I take captive every thought. My thoughts don't control me. I control my thoughts. It's the Bible says to take captive your thoughts. So when a thought comes in, I'm going to capture it. When you take it captive, you capture it. And then, you know, you wrestle it to the ground. You don't own me. I own you. Or I rule you. You don't rule me. And then I journal a lot. I write a ton of stuff out. It's just how I've learned to process my internal struggles of burying, of struggling, of insecurity, of all of these things. So yeah, failure is just, that's That's how I roll. That's my life.
I would say you've hit on some, some key takeaways and some interesting thoughts. I mean, I really like where you talked about what you don't want to talk about is probably what you're insecure in, right?
Yeah.
I think it's a great thing for the audience. Like, sit for a moment and go, hey, what are the conversations I normally only have with myself but not with others? Mm-hmm. There's probably something I'm insecure about.
Yeah.
Two, the asking questions more in your marriage, right? I think what's interesting is a lot of people do that but don't create space for a real response.
Yeah.
And that's something I push back on a lot of people. Like, do you actually create an atmosphere? But what I find interesting is, are you doing it for yourself or are you doing it because it's what you should do, right? And that's, yeah. I find myself, I'm a big fan of, I'll ride in that passenger seat, but at some point, then I would say this happened in 2023, I'm like, Jesus, this is cool, but like, you should just go sit back there.
Yeah, yeah, yeah,
I'm
got this.
Grab this wheel, and I'm going to show you how to drive this car. Mm-hmm.
I don't need you.
I will gear jam the shit out of that car, and we will go three times faster.
Absolutely.
But when we hit that wall, it's going to hurt real bad.
Absolutely. And I think that the nature of humanity is that way, is that I don't need, I don't need anybody. And it's unfortunate because the way that, if we were to look at it in ancient terminology, a master's degree in Hebrew was being, and I've stole some of this from a book from John Mark Comer, would to be an apprentice, which means you were with that person learning all the time. You learned about how they did their life. You lived with them. You did everything with them, and you basically became their disciple. Nowadays, we don't think that way. This was interesting. I saw this yesterday, or I heard this yesterday. I thought it was amazing. Western society really branches off of Roman society. In other words, I'm the teacher. You all listen to what I have to say. That's teaching. Ancient Hebrew living was the opposite. It was around tables.
Okay.
It was around learning from from the person that was leading you. Whereas in today's time, we adopt a lot of Roman mentality on the idea of, I'm the smartest person in the room. The person at the front of the room is the smartest person in the room, and you learn and you're educated because they're at the front of the room. Ancient Hebrew living would say the most gifted person is the person I get to sit around the table with. It's the person that I can have deep, meaningful relationship with. And most of us in our society think that that's not the way of learning, is that I've got to go sit in front of a professor and they're going to educate me. And the reality is that I think stories educate people, format how we do the shape and the way we live our lives. And I think in our current condition as a society, we are looking for deep, meaningful relationships more than we are anything right now, because we are very, very, very alone.
Yeah, 100, I mean, that's the main reason I started the podcast. So yeah. It's like my buddy, I was driving back last night for my last one, and he goes, Devin, did you start the podcast because you didn't want to feel alone with everything you were going through? I said, 100%. He's like, really? I didn't know that. I was like, I guess I always knew it, but I didn't articulate it that, yeah, I want to sit in rooms with people who have failed, hear their stories, reminisce on it, talk about it, have challenging thoughts and conversations, and leave the room with a new perspective. Maybe I don't agree with it, but at least I learned it and had
for
a
sure.
conversation. And he's like, well, don't you get that already? I was like, no, I just get superficial conversations all day. And I was like, so I'm trying to go create spaces where I can learn from people.
I mean, at the end of the day, but again, Western society would say that if I have certain things, then I am somebody.
Yes.
I would argue that you can have those certain things and still be nobody in your own home and in your own relationships with your friends. And at the end of the day, man, I think that who you do life with is one of the greatest things that you can embody as a human. I teach through four frameworks. Having a foundational principle, like, what am I building my life on? The second one that I teach through is, who am I building my life with? And oftentimes what your alignment, who you're aligned with, will determine the assignment that you're going to build in the future. And most people don't see it that way. They think I've got to, my alignment is only with the person that can get me to the next level. My alignment is the person that can look at me and say, you're not being who you're supposed to be as a human. And that's what gets me to the next level. And so it's both and, don't get me wrong. Right. You need both. But for the most part, I have strategically now aligned myself with people that want to see me succeed, but that will also care more about me than they do what I'm trying to accomplish.
Yes.
And that's huge for me. People come into your life to do four things: add, subtract, multiply, and divide. And I want people that are adding and multiplying my life simultaneously. And some people, the addition is great because it's the one-on-one. And then you find a person that exponentially multiplies your life. And I would argue that some of that should be the person that you do life with in your spouse.
100%.
They should multiply your life and add. Are there going to be times where there's division and arguments and subtract? Yes. But at the end of the day, who you do life with, man, it's a game changer. It's crucial for you to succeed in your business as an entrepreneur. It's also crucial for you to succeed as a husband. And then one day when you have kids, to succeed as a father. I have people in my life that have kids older than me because I'm asking them, how'd you get your kids to act like that when they're in their 20s? And I'm asking that question. And I got some people that are in the same stage of me, and all we do why are our kids just so crazy? You know, they're 13. So there's a both and with that. You got to have the right people around you.
I think something you're touching on that I originally didn't align with, and through my own mistakes I did, is I was a huge fan for a while of the fallacy of like, hey, you are the sum of the people you're in the room with, right? Which has a point. But I think a fallacy that started picking up was, well, if you're not in the room with people who are wealthy, you'll never be wealthy. If you're not in the room with people who are the most intelligent, you'll never be intelligent.
Yeah.
And what I struggled with, and I actually commented on someone's post this week about it, you should be in the room with those people, but that doesn't mean they're your inner circle. Yeah. I was like, my inner circle, what I'm realizing, are those that help me become just the best me as a human.
Mm-hmm.
And help me be a better friend, a better husband, a better business partner.
Right.
And the people that outside of that circle I do business with, you don't need to be my friend. You don't need to hold those standards. It can be transactional then.
Right.
But my foundation doesn't need to be the richest or the wealthiest people. It needs to be those who align on my morals and beliefs and in my compass.
Mm-hmm.
And then everything else will be fruitful with, and doesn't mean money wise, but I'll actually enjoy my life.
Yeah. And if you're driving your car and it's out of alignment, what you do is you drift.
Yeah.
And when you drift, you go off the course of what your navigational system could have you be at. And drifting could, let's say you drift too far, you hit something on the side of the road that gives you a flat tire, you're stuck. More so, let's say you drift too far and you get into an accident and it wrecks your life. And so alignment, man, it's what keeps me within these particular assignments, how I do my life and how I live my life. And unfortunately, like you said, is that we think oftentimes, I've been in rooms with guys who are pastoring large churches, been in rooms with guys who are leading massive businesses. And we think that I've got to be, if I'm ever going to be like them, then I've got to be in the room with them. And the reality is now it's changed because I can follow you and I can listen to your podcast and you can actually help me with my business and mentor me without me ever being in the room with you. But what you can't do is look at me and say, hey, Mitch, how's your daughter? Is she doing okay? Like, oh, my bad. Is she, are you present in her life? When's the last time you just took her out to dinner and just ask her questions? That doesn't happen in a room where you're just transactional.
No.
And I think in our world, what we need more than transaction is a sense of community. Because relationships can be transactional too. It can be, you ever thought about this? Like sometimes, and I have a hard time with this because I'm a failure, but sometimes we will do things like, I say this statement to young people often, hey, there's nothing you can do that'll make God love you more. There's nothing you can do that'll make God love you less. God loves you. But most of us view God through the lens of probably how we were parented. And so what we tend to do is try to earn our way to God. What's really cool about God is there's this bridge and this gap through Jesus that says, you don't have to get to me. I came to earth. And it's a beautiful picture of sacrifice and care and love. And the unfortunate part is that you don't have to, or the fortunate part is that you don't have to earn that. Like you're loved. Like, bro, Devin, you're a loved human being, regardless of what anybody else says. And I find beauty in that, and I also find difficulty in that, because my dad was very caring and loving. But for some people, they only view God or people as transactions. I will love you if you do X, Y, Z for me. And I don't think that that's the way all business should be done or all relationships should be done. I'm not going to love Devin only if Devin puts me on his podcast. I'm going to love hanging out with Devin because I think Devin's a cool dude. And so it's not, this is not transactional.
Right.
This is something that I think is transformational. And what most people forget is that they're living lives of transactions instead of transformation. And I would rather live a transformational life than a transactional life. And that's why I love connecting with people like you, because this is an awesome opportunity to sit and talk with you. But more importantly, when we're done here, like I'm getting your number.
Yeah.
And yeah, if you move to Texas, we're going to get dinner. I'm meeting your wife. I want to make sure you're good when you come into our state. Like what can I do to help you get in the right areas? And so that's what I love about this kind of stuff. It's important to me.
Yeah, it was funny. A lot of people have been asking me, like, hey, why do you do in person? Like, why don't you just do virtual? I was like, man, I feel like we're just smashing the easy button in life of virtual. And
for
I just
sure.
Can't take it
for sure.
Like,
I'm so tired of Zoom. Yeah, it's like, just, golly.
Like, let's shake a hand and look you in the eyes, not with a screen. But while we're getting towards the end, is there any failure we haven't touched on or a fallacy we haven't touched on that you really want to hit home before we leave the audience with a challenge?
Man, I don't know if there's anything that I've not touched. I mean, shoot, my whole life is an up and down journey. But I would say this. I would say, like, if you're not chasing failure, there's a good chance you're not chasing success. And there's a lot of people that are afraid to fail. And it's the old adage, Michael Jordan says he's missed so many thousand shots. He's done all these things, and that's why he's able to succeed. And that's a true statement. I saw a deal with Steph Curry the other day. I'm a sports nut, and it talked about how many shots he shoots in a day and how many he misses, so that when he gets into a game, it's like clockwork. And so I think success oftentimes is defined by how well we fail. And for me, mine's just a small thing. You know, I've failed as a sibling to my siblings. I've failed as a brother. I've failed as a son or a daughter, or maybe you failed as a son or a daughter. Or for me, I failed as a husband or a pastor. But that doesn't define my life. And I think what tends to happen is if we're afraid to fail because we're afraid it's going to define who we are as a person. And failure doesn't define you. It describes you as a human. But it's not the end all be all. It's a part. It's not the whole book. And so I'm honored just to continue in whatever it is we have next. I love it.
I love the defining parts. I think somebody's like, oh, I'm not afraid of failure. I'm not afraid what people think. And I'm like, but if you really sit down, I think all of us, there's a part of you that goes, but what will people think? Or if I do fail, does that mean I'm not good enough, or I won't be able to do it, or I shouldn't have ever tried?
It's that insecurity.
Yeah,
if somebody's better at something than us, we become insecure immediately. And so I do it all the time. Like I communicate often. And so I listen to a lot of people talk. And there are times where I'm like, oh, dude, man, that person's, they're freaking good. I could never do that. And if I were to meet them, I would be the most insecure person in the world. I pride myself on being a non-anxious presence in an anxious environment, but I'm also an insecure human being. And I wrestle it to the ground all the time. If I go into a room and I've got guys that are great communicators, I'm like, man, I can't meet them because it's going to make me feel like I'm not good enough. That's the opposite of what I think it means to fail, though. You've got to put yourself out there to people who are doing things better than you, because that's how you learn. It's the best way to learn.
I would say the biggest thing I've learned in the last year plus of putting myself out there more and more is I've always believed in it. There's always people better than you out there, but what you don't realize is there's hundreds of millions of people who are better than you at millions of different things everywhere you go.
Absolutely.
Your pure existence is being around people. No matter what room you're in or their age, there's something they're better than you. I don't care if they're 12. They can probably run a computer better than me.
Yep.
I don't know. But right, I mean, my buddy's 7-year-old's a computer programmer already. Apparently, there's all these classes they go to. So it's like, hey, you really got to just accept I am 1% of a piece of an equation.
And
99 other people than me are required.
It's the comfort of knowing one's self.
Yeah. Yep.
And if you don't know... To me, the best leader in a room is the most self-aware leader.
Yes, 100%.
And if you know yourself, then you can lead well. But until you discover yourself, you'll lead poorly.
And discovering yourself is not fun, but it's very fruitful.
But it's fruitful and necessary, for sure.
So what's the challenge you leave with the audience that's either a tangible one or change your mindset?
I think if I could get people to shift their mindset, and one thing that I'm learning a lot of in the last year is this practice and this art of slowing down. We live fast-paced, crazy society. Everything's at our fingertips. The average person touches their phone 24 times a second. 24 times a minute. You know, it's wild. And I am really putting into practice what it looks like for me to slow down. It's not easy. It's difficult to do. But I think what we have done is we've become so burned out, stressed out, anxiety ridden. Gen Z, the generation that I'm the top half of the millennial generation, Gen Z is the most stressed generation that we see coming about. And a lot of it, to me, and I don't have any backing for this, but I think it's because there's a constant need to feel wanted, accepted, known, valued, all these things. And validation has come from the digital world. And I'm all for the digital world, but I'm also all for having deep, meaningful relationships. And the way that I slow down is in those relationships. I am more interested in now having a conversation around a table than I am through a text. You know, you can go to work, you can go to conferences, you can go to all these places and sit next to people and really never know them. And I've said this a while back in a message is that what happens is rows, when you sit next to somebody, you listen to a message. When you sit across from a table from somebody, you become a message. And that message is like, hey man, like how's life? What's going on in your world? And at 40, I've slowed down. And that's not always been easy for me. And I watched the Super Bowl the other night by myself. That was so hard. I was so tired. And for the first time, nobody asked me to come to a Super Bowl party in a long time. And I went home and I literally watched the entire Super Bowl by myself. And it was a practice for me to slow down. And I think that somebody like me, who's that high eye, can be in a room and feel like everything's good, but deep down, still feel alone. And the exact opposite is somebody who's introverted and the room stresses them out, but they can be at home by themselves and still feel alone. And so we've got to get to this place to where we've got to practice this art of slowing down and rhythmic living and trying not to work our way to something instead of working our way from something. And that is the inner piece of, like, I'm not trying to work my way to something. I'm working my way from peace, from joy, from practice, from relationship. This is what matters to me. If I can look at myself in my 50s, in my 60s, what I want to give back to the next generation is not how many likes you can get on a video. It's not how many people are listening to your podcast. I love all those things. But it's who's in your corner that's providing deep, meaningful relationship. And I think that we are in a society that is struggling to figure out who that is and what that looks like. The practice of relationship has been through Zoom. Thank you for doing this. Yeah. It's been through, you know, COVID. I don't think COVID did anything that we didn't know that we were struggling with before. The only thing it did was that it expedited and it exposed what we were already struggling with as humans. It expedited this idea of, you know, of we're already a lonely group of people. So like, it's like, oh man, it became quick. Let's go to the classroom quick. Everything's going to be done digitally now. But it also exposed that we're humans and we need each other. And so I'm just slowing down. I'll walk back to my car today. I'm not in a hurry. People hate me in Dallas Fort Worth. I drive the speed limit and people are like, how do you do that? And I go, I leave on time. I leave early. Even today I was trying to get here and park and I was like, guys are honking at me and I'm just smiling. They probably hate me in Dallas. I'm okay with that. I'm not in a hurry anymore because the only thing that it's done is cause more stress and anxiety in my life. And I'm not saying don't have a goal, don't have a purpose, and don't work hard. I would never say that. Those are important. Now, I'm going to work really hard, but I'm also going to practice this idea of, like, what matters most in my life. 13-year-old daughter, my job, and developing people. Those things matter most. Everything else is an option. It's not something I have to do.
Yeah, it's so funny. My goal this year was to slow down. I was talking to my wife last night, and she goes, you know you're the furthest thing from that right now. I was like, yeah, that's brutal.
Yeah.
But the one thought that I always sit with that just I haven't thought about in, I'd say, almost a year, if not more, and I think it's because I was running too fast, is I used to always ask people, I'm like, do you ever think about all the stories you drive past and walk by in a day?
100%.
Like, you're going down the interstate. Like, I drove to Austin and back yesterday, so I passed hundreds of cars with hundreds of people with hundreds of stories that would probably blow my mind, that'd be fascinating, that I would have empathy with, that I'd want to pray with and talk to and motivate. I'm like, but we're so busy just in our story. And I was like, you'll always be lonely. Your story will never be fun, and you'll never have fulfillment living just your story.
Nope.
Like, what's one good TV series that's about a single human being that never engages with anybody unless it's transactional? Like,
absolutely.
It doesn't exist.
And I think that that's why the TV shows that we love so much, Friends.
Yep.
I think that those shows are about humans, you know, about the friendships, the relationships. One of my favorite shows, I talk about this show all the time. People make fun of me for watching it, but I loved the show The New Girl when it was on TV.
Oh, come on.
Hilarious. Yes. I love Schmidt. He's my favorite. But I love that each episode ends with them doing something that brings them back together as humans, as friends. And I think there's a lot of there's a lot to be said about it. And I think we live now where I don't watch shows that are simply about one person. They don't make shows that, unless it's a docuseries about a person that's done some stupid things in their life by themselves, you know? And so I'm all about people and team and growing. And so I'm thankful, man. That practice is very hard, but I encourage that. One book I would recommend, Jean-Marc Comer wrote a book called The Ruthless Elimination of Hurry. And I would recommend, whether you love God or believe in God or not, I think its practice is amazing when it comes to living life. Because he talks about the burned out, stressed out. We're, you know, clicking our life into oblivion.
Oh, yeah.
And it's where we're at. And I've learned, I'm trying to. I spent 2 years off of social media.
Good for you.
None. I got back in LinkedIn. That's when I knew I needed a professional group of people to be around. And then I slowly got back on the other things. But even now, I don't have notifications on my phone. Well, if you text me, it doesn't pop up your name. I don't know. Unless you have a specific text message, I don't know who you are.
Yeah.
I'm not in a hurry to respond back to you.
Yeah, I love it. I had someone who texted me. Kind of a business relationship thing going on that just started out, and they sent me all these texts, and I was like, okay, I'll get back to you later, right? And he texts me like 6 hours later. He's like, are you okay? Question mark. And I texted back and I was like, hey, I'm in Texas for 4 days. My focus is podcast, the business meeting, and then my wife back at home. I said, I really don't care about anything else right now, because I've learned I won't show up good to any of this if I'm also trying to keep all of these plates spinning. And guess what's crazy? If I set those plates down, they're going to be there on Wednesday when I get back.
That's exactly right.
So I'll talk to you then. And he's like, oh, got it. Yeah, totally. I guess that's fine. I was like, yeah, I'm like, people. But it's funny because even 6 months ago, I would have tried to keep them all going.
Yeah.
And I wouldn't have been present with you. I wouldn't have had a good conversation with the others. And then by the time I got back, you would need a vacation from your vacation.
That's most people. I think I read a statistic said that 50-something percent of people don't feel rested after their vacation.
Yeah.
And it's because they're afraid of what they're coming back to. Emails, text messages, all these things. And man, I'm all about production. I'm also all about efficiency.
Mm-hmm.
And I think efficiency trumps production, because if you can be efficient at it, I'm a specialist kind of person, not a generalist. So if we can be efficient at these three or four things, let's do it really, really well. And that will produce more in the long run than trying to do a bunch of stuff that is only, it's just subtracting from you over time. And so.
Awesome. Well, I appreciate you joining me. It's been a blast.
Absolutely.
I enjoyed our conversation. Any final nugget of wisdom you want to leave before we sign off?
And just love those closest to you. You don't know how long you got with them. And so care for them, love them. And that's it, really. And I love my kid. And that's I spend as much time as I can with her. So
awesome. Well, till next time, y'all, let's slow down, enjoy life, and be efficient with the hustle you do apply and where you apply it.
Took quite a fall, didn't we, Master Bruce?
And why did we fall, Bruce? So we can learn to pick ourselves up.